Hello, my spooky friends.
My name is Cassie.
And I'm Caitlin.
And welcome in to I'd Survive.
Nailed that.
I always have to acknowledge when it's a good one because sometimes they just go off the rails.
They do so often.
Yeah. What did we do last week?
What, like, did we record last week?
Yeah. What was the episode last week?
Cube. What a time, right?
Wow, we're taking a turn.
Oh, we are. No, the crazy thing is I know nothing about the movie we're covering today. Not a single thing.
I think that would be everyone.
Okay, well, I mean, yes. Yeah. I think you never heard of this.
Yeah, you're speaking for the people right now. We'll get into it. It's going to be an interesting one today. But first, I have to ask you before you grill me.
Okay, yep, because I'm ready.
Have you watched any new horror this week?
I have. I watched, finally, a movie that I had been so excited about, and that movie is Him, which, if you are hearing me say that I was so excited about it, you're probably like, why were you excited? Listen, I know it was getting terrible reviews, but I still was like, the concept of sports and horror being put together is just like something that's like really enticing to me, because that's two of my major parts of my personality colliding in a way that I'm not used to. Like, sports and horror, I feel like, is not something that's often covered.
No, I don't think I've ever seen a sports horror, actually.
Me
but
neither.
I'm totally open to that being a thing.
Exactly. And so I watched Him, and I unfortunately was disappointed, and I should have trusted the people, and I'm really sad because I think the movie, conceptually, really cool, and I liked the idea of what they were going for. I mean, when you think about it, it shouldn't be that hard. Like, the obsession with wanting to be the best in your sport, you know, like that being put into a horror movie actually sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
It just, unfortunately, the way they went about it, I was just like, oh, no. It's just too weird. It was too weird.
It lost its own plot.
Yeah, it like, simultaneously, I was talking to someone about this yesterday, it simultaneously was too on the nose and in your face with the symbolism, but also too obscure and weird at the same time.
Oh, man.
And that sounds strange, but that's exactly how I felt. If the movie had been slightly more grounded in reality, I think I would have liked it more. It just was like, I was like, what is going on? Like, most of the time. So that was disappointing, but I respect what they were trying to do.
Yeah. I probably won't be watching that one. I was waiting for you to take one for the team, and you did, and I appreciate that.
Got you.
But it should be even more up your alley than mine. So if it's not even up there for you, I know I'm going to just be disappointed.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, anything else?
That is it, aside from stuff that I will have for next week.
Okay, perfect. I did watch a horror movie for the first time this week. I'm so scared.
You should be scared. I, unfortunately, saw the review on Letterboxd.
Yeah.
And you want to talk about that, Cassie?
Okay.
You want to discuss it?
So you want to debate?
I do, actually.
Okay, so I watched, for the first time ever, It Chapter 2. For context, I watched It Chapter 1, like, in theaters when it first came out, and I loved it. I'd probably give it, like, a 4 out of 5 on Letterboxd. And then I read the book, so I just, like, never got around to It Chapter 2 because I was just more interested in, like, the kids' storyline in the book. And so I was like, when it came to It Chapter 2, I was like, I'll get there. But now I've been watching them with my brother. So we were like, okay, let's do Chapter 2. We're really excited still for the series. But neither of us liked it. And actually, I watched it with my brother and my stepdad, and it was all of our first times watching. And I gave it 1.5 out of 5.
Yeah, she did. And it hurt me to my core, and I will never get over it.
I know. I told my boyfriend, this might be the last podcast today.
Dude, listen, your opinion is not unpopular. Okay. That much is true. A lot of people have that feeling towards two, mm-hmm. that they just don't like it as much as the first one. I mm-hmm. think I do understand that. And I feel that way about the 1990 adaptation where the adult mm. portion is just like, just not it.
Yeah.
But I think what pulls it through for me mm-hmm. in the 2019 version is the casting. I love Very the good. Cast. Like, yeah. Bill Hader, James Ranson, like I just like the casting for me was just chef's kiss perfection.
Agreed.
And then like I love Pennywise, so
exactly.
It just makes me happy when he appears. So yeah. It's just I love it. I love yeah. it so much. But I am pained physically.
I know.
But I can get over it. I can handle it.
Yeah. I'm guessing like the things that I didn't love about it is all popular opinion mm. then where I – well, it was very long. Like, sure. I feel like they already had to stretch the plot to make an entire movie for the adult storyline. So I don't know why it was stretched to 3 hours. Mm. And then I also – I think you can make it make sense. So I think this is like a personal thing. It's not like an objective thing because I think you can make it make sense. But – I feel like the adults like never grew up. Like they are exactly, which is cool to see them, the actors like capture the kids' essence from the first movie. And it's like very believable that you are that same kid, but it's like they didn't evolve in the last 27 years. Mm-hmm. And I think you could say like they fall back into who they used to be now that they're back in Derry and they're with That's each exactly. other for the first time.
Yeah. That's exactly what I would say.
Yeah.
But
yeah, but like it was still that kid humor, but in adults, it didn't work as well for me, even mm. though it was done well and I think how they intended it just like was weird to me. Loved the grandma. the grandma sequence is my favorite. So like the 1.5 is my love for some of those horror sequences.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. like the plot and like the writing and I don't know. I could get into spoiler territory, but and I'm not going to do that. But yeah, it was like a visual feast at times, and I appreciated that. But that's kind of like what the fun of it was for me, and then that was it.
Yeah. No. And so. And that's fair. I mean, the book is just so complex, and mm-hmm. I'm rereading it right now, and it's like mm-hmm. I cannot believe the universe that Stephen King is able to. I know. Build. Like, even though, yeah, it's like 1,800 pages, so like he better be building something in there. But, right. but it's like crazy. And then like, it's interesting to hear you say, because your review is something about it should have been one movie, which mm-hmm. is crazy, just given that the book is 1,800 pages.
I know.
But Stephen King is known for just fleshing out every little detail.
Yeah.
And every character and everything. So like, yeah, I could see that. I would be curious to see what would happen in a single.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess we kind of did see that with the 3-hour miniseries, but a modern day single adaptation. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think like a 2.5, 2 45-minute movie could work because I feel like most people, you're more captivated by the kids' portion than the adult portion, mm-hmm. but the adult portion is important. And so I think it'd be cool to like frame it as like, the adults are there and they frame it as when I was a kid. And so like the adults are the present and then the entire story of them as kids is flashback throughout the movie mm-hmm. and it's heavy on the flashbacks. But then mm-hmm. like the adults like bring it together and like yeah. bring in the ending and I don't know. Yeah.
I think you would hate to hear that Andy Muschietti, aka the director, he has for years talked about how he's always wanted to put together his cut of the two films together. And Ooh. I'm still waiting for that day. Like, I wow. want that so bad. Like, to basically cut the two up and intertwine them in the way yes. that makes sense for the book. But it probably yeah. would be, like, 6 hours long. So,
yeah,
I think it'd be wild. But I yeah. want it, so.
I would be interested to see that, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I will have you know that even though I gave It Chapter 2 a 1.5, I would give this movie that we're going to talk about today 0 stars if I could.
Oh, no. Oh, dear.
Yeah, this movie made me so angry.
Oh, that's always how you want to feel going into these. Oh, no. I'm concerned.
We have yet to have a movie that if one of us feels angry, the other person doesn't. Like, we usually True. Mesh. We usually both get angry or we both love something. Like, we have very similar tastes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for most things.
Well.
So I'm curious to see if you're as angry as me. Obviously, my recap is biased, so you probably will be, but
I'll probably be pissed.
Yeah. So ATM is a horror thriller film starring Josh Peck from Drake and Josh.
Oh, I knew there was someone in this movie that you brought up. Yeah. Josh Peck. Okay.
It came out in 2012. It was David Brooks's first and last movie as a director.
First and last. Just in case you were wondering.
It has a 13% critic score and 23% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. And with a $3 million budget, it made $1 million at the box office.
Oh. Oh, dear.
But what's important is that this was a blockbuster hit over at my dad's house when we rented it from Family Video in 2012.
You're like, this is a blockbuster. I'm like, when? Like, did it have a resurge? No.
About an hour and a half in 2012 at my dad's apartment.
Incredible.
No, I ate this up when I was a kid, which I was like, oh, this will be fun. Like, I knew it wasn't a great movie, but I remember having fun with it as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
How I've changed.
Oh, no.
Before we get into it, quick reminder that over on our Discord, we have this new thing where you can follow along through this link and fill out the same worksheet that Caitlin and I are filling out to compute our survivability score. So I'll be asking her questions at the check-ins. You can answer those same questions with the link on our Discord to get your own score.
And to get to our Discord, by the way, that would be via our Instagram at I'd Survive Podcast. There's a link there for you.
Perfect. The story begins in a corporate skyscraper housing a brokerage firm. I don't know why. I feel like in like the early 2010s, so many horror movies started in like corporate jobs. I don't know what that was about, but okay, we're here again.
Money is scary. So
yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
We meet Dave and Corey, who have cubicles right next to each other and have become friends over the years. And Corey tells Dave that today...
Dude, I'm not going to be able to take this seriously. Dude.
So Corey is the name of my boyfriend.
I'm just going to be picturing Corey this whole time. Okay, great.
And Corey is also Josh Peck.
Oh, even better. Josh Peck's out. Corey is in.
Dave and Corey, besties in cubicles. Corey tells Dave that today is his last chance. And Dave's confused, like, what do you mean? Corey gestures over to a beautiful blonde coworker of theirs by the fax machine. Her name is Emily, and apparently it's her last day. She quit.
Ooh.
So Corey's like, it's your last chance to ask her out. And Dave didn't realize that it was her last day, and he thinks about it for a second. He's like, no, I can't do that again. Corey tells Dave that the last time he tried to ask Emily out doesn't count because he literally said, would you like to attend a gathering?
Oh.
And we're pretty sure Emily was just confused and didn't even realize that Dave meant a date. So
yeah, I would be in the same boat on that.
Yeah,
one.
I'd be a little scared.
Do you want to attend a gathering? Like, absolutely not.
Is it a cult?
It sounds like a cult. No.
Yeah. So tonight is the office Christmas party, and Corey talks Dave into coming for just one drink, and maybe he'll take one more shot at Emily at the party.
Okay.
So at the party, he almost does that. She's standing over at the drinks table, and Dave mans up and goes over and talks to her. A lot of nervous, awkward tension that makes it super obvious that they both really like each other.
Oh.
Yeah. But neither of them have ever, like, owned up to their crush. So the giddy small talk fizzles out after a minute or two, and Emily's like, okay, well, I'm going to head out. Like,
oh, God.
She's like, was waiting for him to go for it, and he didn't. Right. So Dave's response is, all right, catch you later.
Mm-hmm. Good job, buddy. Nice try.
She leaves, and we cut to her outside attempting to hail a cab. But Dave comes running out of the building for her, insisting that she forgot her hat, but like Emily is wearing a hat. So then Dave's just looking down at the hat in his hands, and he's like, I just stole someone's hat.
Oh, yes. He's killing it right now.
I know. It's a little, it's endearing. It's endearing.
Yeah, he's trying.
So they have a laugh about that. And Dave finally gathers up the courage to ask her out to go to lunch sometime. She's into it, admitting that talking to him makes her really nervous. And she never picked up on any signs of him being into her. So he tells her that he always has been, but he was too nervous himself to ask her out. And then he offers to drive her home so she doesn't have to spend money on a cab, and she agrees.
Cute. W Dave.
It's cute.
W Dave.
He tells her to wait here while he brings his car around, and then back inside the building at the party, he goes over to Corey and the guys that he's hanging out with and tells them that he's heading out. So once he explains that he's leaving early to give Emily a ride home, they're all very happy for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then Corey's like, all right, let's go. And he stands up, but Dave's like, so did you hear me? I said I'm giving Emily a ride.
Yeah.
And Corey doesn't see what the big deal is and says to just like drop him off on the way. But
no.
Exactly. Like L friend.
L.
Dave points out that Corey is 20 minutes in the opposite direction of Emily's place.
Yep.
But Corey basically guilts Dave into agreeing to drive him. So off they go. Corey is very like just standard finance bro asshole, thinks he's hilarious. And
gotcha.
Expects everyone to like laugh at all his jokes and then drive him wherever he wants.
I feel the energy so strong.
Yeah.
I get it.
We cut to an excruciating car ride spent with Corey gabbing away in the back seat. He's on Dave's phone calling one of the guys at the party, asking if he left his own phone there.
Oh my God.
And he did. And he gets one of the guys to promise to put it on his desk for him. So I guess it's not a big deal and he's going to get it on Monday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So then when he's done with the phone call, he's like, Dave, your phone's dying, by the way. And then he just throws it up front and it falls under one of the seats.
Oh.
Well, yes.
Please don't try and find it right now.
Dave's already apologizing to Emily for Corey's obnoxious behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But we're just getting started.
Oh, no, 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 no. Dude, no, you know what? I'm feeling speak no evil. The car ride. Do you remember the car ride in that?
Oh my God. The car ride is excruciating. That was more excruciating than this. Well, what's worse? Your friend acting that way or a stranger? Maybe this is worse.
Ooh, yeah.
Now Corey keeps droning on and on about how hungry he is and he wants to stop somewhere because he needs to eat. And Dave says no because it's past midnight now and nothing's open. But Corey's like, no, there's a pizza place nearby that's open until 2. Come on, man. I don't have any food at home and I have low blood sugar because I'm dyslexic.
Oh my God. I'm so done. I'm literally so done. Like, I'm kicking you out of my car.
You're rooting for his death.
Oh, you know, I am, but I know he's Josh Peck. So, like, I'm a little bit concerned about that.
Yeah. So just to get Corey to shut up, Dave caves in and is like, okay, fine, we can stop at this pizza spot. But then Corey goes, great, we'll just have to stop at the ATM first. They only take cash.
ATM, you say?
ATM.
Oh, no.
So this is how we end up at the creepiest ATM setup that I've ever seen. It is an ATM vestibule. So it's this small glass building that's open 24/7.
Mm, yes.
And it's surrounded by this huge, expansive parking lot.
Oh.
Isn't that odd? I wonder why. I wonder if this is like a horror movie thing or if this is real.
I think it's real. And I only say that because like I've seen similar things. It's not that like... It's just because they happen to be in a parking lot that's like at a shopping center. So they are surrounded by parking lot, but there's generally like some buildings nearby.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Because there's definitely buildings nearby the parking lot. We don't like get a close look at them, but that's probably what's happening.
Yeah.
So Dave pulls in, but he doesn't pull up close to the vestibule at – oh, this is going to be like literally take a shot every time I say vestibule.
let me grab my vodka. Yeah.
So he stops about halfway across the parking lot and Corey laughs, like clocking the fact that Dave is punishing him for his behavior by making him walk further for his cash.
Mm-hmm.
Weird, but okay.
Yeah.
Honestly, though, it's not really about punishing Corey. It's more about finally getting some alone time with Emily for a minute.
Yes. I'm leaving, by the way. He gets out of the car and I'm out. Like, oh my God, I'm so done.
I know. So as Corey walks off to the ATM, Dave and Emily are finally able to chat in the car, and we get some cute, sweet conversation. They're vibing, they're hitting it off. That is until Dave notices Corey waving him over from inside the ATM. He groans and is like, oh my God, what now? All right, I gotta go see what's up. He gets out of the car, runs over and inside the ATM. After a minute or so, Emily gets cold and lonely in the car and decides to get out herself. She grabs the keys, tries to hit the button to lock the car on the key fob, but it doesn't work. So whatever, she continues on and heads into the ATM as well.
Okay, yeah.
Inside, we find out that Corey's card isn't working. His excuse is that the magnetic strip is broken. Which, shout out, so is mine.
Oh, so that's great.
Yeah, I know you're not supposed to, but I left my purse in my car when it was like negative 40 degrees out.
Oh.
And I think it messed with my card somehow because it works like online and on everything still, but in person it just doesn't work. So I'm like, okay, maybe I'll believe you then, Corey. Maybe I will.
Yeah.
So Dave is now using his card to get some money for the pizza that he doesn't even want. Mm-hmm. And Corey promises he'll pay him back for it.
Sure.
Yeah. Dave gets the money and the three of them turn around to head back to the door, but they stop short when they see on the other side of the glass, about 50 yards away, is the silhouette of a man in a very oversized winter coat with one of those fluffy hoods.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And boot. Okay, I said boats. There's not an immense amount of boats surrounding the man. He's in boots.
I think it'd be really fun if there were boats, though.
So this dude's just standing there facing them, and he's got a weird stance. Like, it catches them off guard.
Mm-hmm.
Both Emily and Dave are freaked out. Like, why is this man staring at us? It's creepy. Corey is like, whatever, let's just go. It's cold, and he probably is just waiting to use the ATM. But Dave and Emily stop him. Emily asks where this dude's car is. Like, that's the other weird thing about this.
Oh, yeah, he just walked up.
Yeah. And Corey's answer is probably in his wallet. Because he's really funny.
I don't get it.
And me either.
What?
Don't know. Dave asks, what if he's waiting to rob us? Which I think that would be my first assumption as well.
For sure. Because I would think like an isolated looking ATM would be a spot to hit people.
Yep.
To steal stuff.
Absolutely. I would be nervous to roll up to an ATM at midnight.
Yeah.
Corey, of course, denies that too. So Corey decides to just go outside. He opens the door, he takes a step, but then this coat man takes a step forward too. And Corey immediately falls back into the ATM, freaked out. But he's like still making excuses, trying to justify everything, acting like he's not scared.
Mm-hmm.
He says the guy thought that they were about to leave. So like, yeah, he just took a step forward, ready to head into the ATM now, right? Right? He doesn't want to be scared.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Emily suggests that maybe he's just homeless and harmless. Like, what if it's just some random dude? Like, why are we so scared?
Yeah.
But then they see another random dude with his dog on the edge of the parking lot by the dumpsters. I don't know if this man is actually homeless or if he just really likes to take his dog on walks in creepy parking lots at 1 a.m. Like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
But the coat man sees this guy and walks over to him. And our core three in the vestibule just stand and watch as he reaches the man, punches him down to the ground, and then grabs him by the back of his head and pounds his face repeatedly into the concrete until he's dead.
Okay. All right. There are decisions that need to be made.
Right now.
Right now. I'm fucking running.
Exactly. Oh my God. You already are starting to lay the groundwork as to why this movie pisses me off.
Oh boy. All right. Well, so I would survive, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go.
Our core three are freaking out in the ATM. Dave's pounding on the glass. He's like, stop, hey. He's like,
just, yeah, that's effective.
It's very effective. And then also, I wrote in here, I don't know why they didn't immediately start running to their car as soon as the guy set his sights on another man.
Yeah.
Like, he walked like between 50 and 100 yards over to the dump. This is a huge parking lot.
Oh.
They absolutely... As soon as the dude was like halfway to the man, it's like, okay, he's for sure going to that man. He's going to do something that like, we got to run now. You would have the time to run to your car and get out of there. You would.
Absolutely. Why would I stand and watch like that?
What's
happen?
He going to do? Who cares? Let's go.
Yeah. What the hell? No.
But yeah, big coat guy returns to his stance 50 yards in front of the vestibule after killing the man. Oh, and the dog like gets sad and like whines and lays on their human and then ends up running away. But at least survives for now. Now he's just abandoned in winter.
Oh.
So yeah, Coatman returns to his stance in front of the vestibule, staring in at them. And now they're starting to fear for their lives. So they just saw him kill a man.
Mm-hmm.
And this is our first survivability check.
What?
I know.
We're crazy. We're here already.
All right. I've got 6 questions for you.
How?
I actually had so many questions for this movie. It's surprising.
That's wild.
How likely are you to refuse to offer your dickhead friend a ride home from the office Christmas party? How likely are you to refuse to do that?
Refuse?
In this situation.
It's hard because, all right, realistically, I think like I would give in and be like, fine, like I'll give you a ride. I'm not happy about it, but I'm probably thinking, all right, we'll just drop him off real quick and then we'll keep going. It'll be fine. But I'm not going to be happy about it. So I'm going to say like 48.
I did 38.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because when it comes to a ride, especially specifically because he agreed to give him a ride already.
Okay.
It's not just like a spring of the moment thing where he's like, well, I need a ride too. It's like they were planning that already. Obviously, I feel like a good friend would be like, okay, cool. I'm cool with the change of plans. I'll grab a taxi. Like, you get the girl.
Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, since I already said like, fine, I'll drive you home.
Yeah.
How likely are you to refuse to stop at the ATM so that your dickhead friend can get some pizza money?
That is much lower. Well, higher.
Technically higher, yeah, based on how we're answering, yeah.
Yeah, we're not stopping.
Yeah.
Especially the way you've been acting.
Yes.
I'm honestly going 92.
I did 89.
Yeah, like you're being a bitch. Like, I'm not stopping for you at this point.
And they're being so ridiculous that it's kind of a speak no evil thing where it's like you want to be polite and you want to be nice and you want to be a people pleaser. But it's way more than that because of how annoying, like they're your friend and they're just being an asshole. You have no reason to be scared of them. You're only annoyed. And so I feel like I could laugh it off and be like, what the hell? No, I'm not stopping to get you pizza. Be grateful for the ride, you weirdo. Like, it's like I could be firm, but also kind of be like, what the hell? Ha ha.
Exactly. Yeah, no, be much easier. If it was a stranger, I would, you know what? I would probably stop.
Yeah.
You know.
A stranger, I'd be nervous, but my friend would be like, be happy for the ride. How likely are you to stay in the car at the ATM vestibule? You know how they just, like, Dave gets waved over, and then she's like, waits a minute, and then is like, oh, I'm going to go see what's going on. Like, how likely are you to just stay in the car?
I think most of the time, I do stay in the car if I'm like, if I'm like with my parents and they're like, oh, I got to run in here real quick. I'm like, I'm staying in the car. You have fun. Like, I'm not getting out. So, I mean, if I got waved in, maybe I would be going in. But like, I'm going to give myself a 67, actually.
Amazing. I went 73.
Okay. Wow. Look at us. Very close.
No, yeah, no. Like the most I would do if I got waved in, I'd have a standoff and I'd be like, nope. It's just not your night then. It's just not your night.
Come here.
And then the most I would do is like pull up.
True.
And roll my window down and be like, what? Because it's cold too. I'm not getting
That's true. Yeah, no, it's so true.
Yeah. How likely are you to run while the killer is attacking the random dumpster man?
Oh.
I know I made a big deal of it and you'd expect me to answer 100 here. I'd slip a little because it is one of those things where it's like, am I standing and freezing in shock?
Exactly. No, that's what I'm reconsidering right now.
Yeah.
I'm like dropping a little. I'll give myself a 95.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I gave myself an 82.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah. But I think we're in the same line of thinking.
Headspace. Yeah. Of like, I don't know. I feel like running just makes the most sense. And like, because there's enough distance to start, like,
right.
I think I'm more likely to freeze if they're really close to me.
Yes.
Because I don't think I can, like, I say it all the time. I picture dreams in the way when you try to run in dreams, you can't run. And like, that's how I feel like I could be in these situations. But if I have enough distance, then I don't think I'll have as much trouble running.
Agreed. How likely are you to not take your dog on a walk to an ATM vestibule at 1 a.m.?
Yeah. Yeah, no, if my dog has to pee at 1 a.m., we're going in the backyard, yeah. And that's about as far as we're going. I'm going to go 98.
I went 100.
Okay.
There's just no way.
Yeah, like, what are we doing? Why are we here?
Yeah. And then finally, how likely are you to survive a random attack from Coat Man as Dumpster Guy? He just comes up behind him.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's one of those.
Yeah, if he just came for me like that and I'm there, 12.
Okay. I went 21.
Yeah.
I am considering if I am at a random ATM at 1 a.m. with my dog, I'm going to be very alert. And I get that he's quiet walking up behind him, but my head would be on a swivel.
Yeah, true.
And so maybe I can see he's coming at me. Actually, you know what? I'm just remembering from the movie, the dude's like, "What's up? What are you doing? Hey, man, you know?" So
he has that time, yeah.
By the time he notices him, though, it's like, you're not going to be able to run.
See, yeah, that's where I think my freeze territory comes in. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. That brings my Act 1 survivability score to a 67%.
Ooh.
Which is really weird. Too low.
It's weird that you said that as I was typing the number 67, by the way.
Spooky.
I was like, really strange.
Yeah.
Mine is 69%. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense. We're like right in the same boat. But I agree, way too low. Damn.
I know. It's just.
But it's the nature of you're there.
Yes.
You got to play the game. You got to play the game.
So yes, they start panicking. They immediately go into search mode inside the vestibule for like an emergency phone line of some kind of like an elevator.
Okay.
But of course there isn't one. So we get a cut that conveys some time has passed. The movie does this a lot where like we cut and it's like another 30 minutes, another 30 minutes, you know?
I get that because that was kind of Cube. So.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe though, like 5 minutes later, Emily wonders why this Coat Man doesn't just come in here and kill
them. Wait, yeah. So is he just standing out there still?
Yeah, he's just standing in this one same position looking like that emoji.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Love that. Cool.
So Emily's wondering why he's not just busting in here. And Dave answers, okay, well, maybe he doesn't have an ATM card, which at first I was like, what does that matter? And then they explain, like, you have to scan your ATM card to open, unlock the door.
Okay.
Dave grabs his keys from Emily and decides that he's going to risk it and try to run for the car. But both of the others are like, no way, you're not going to make it. And I agree. Like, he's between you and the car.
Yeah.
And sure, he's a little bit more to the right, but by the time he sees what you're trying to do, he's going to meet you halfway.
Mm-hmm. When we saw the initial attack on the dog walker, was there a weapon or was it just hands?
Just hands.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Part of me is thinking like we're a 3v1, but someone at least is going to get really hurt, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And Coatman sees Dave like pull out his car keys. So he walks over to Dave's car, opens up the driver's side door, leans down and quote, rips out the wires, according to the subtitles.
Sure.
Yeah. And then he pops open the trunk and grabs a toolbox and crowbar from the back.
Oh, great. Now he has got a weapon.
Exactly. Our core three are watching the whole time and they're just like, what is he doing?
Oh, no.
And then they watch as Coatman walks away from the car, past the vestibule and around back until they don't see him anymore. And they consider
that.
I know. It's like a spider.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
They consider, though, okay, do we run now? What do we do?
Mm-hmm.
And Dave's like, I'm going to run to the car and grab Emily's purse from the passenger seat because her phone is in there.
Okay, I guess. I don't know. I'm more nervous because we can't see him. Like, he could just come right around the corner real quick. Like, he could just be hiding on the side. Like,
yes.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, this is like an all glass situation. So he's not right at the side.
Oh.
They can't see the back wall, but we can see out the side walls.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
But still.
Could still, yeah.
Coatman starts like making crazy noise on this back wall. He's banging on it like he's trying to get through. And we know that there's like a door in the back. They don't have access to it in the section they're in, but he's probably trying to break in. I don't know why the back door instead of the front. Oh, why not just like break the glass? I don't know.
Yeah, the glass seems like a better choice, but you do you.
So the banging continues through this back wall of the vestibule, and Corey's like, nope, he's right there. You won't make it in time to the car. And after a couple more banging sounds from the back, the power suddenly gets cut and everything goes black. And then there's a generator. So about 30 seconds later, some like more minimal lighting does kick back in. And the door still has that active security lock.
Okay, good.
But they don't have heat anymore for some reason. I don't understand, because it's a backup generator. And that is very important when it comes to heat. We accept it.
We accept it. Okay.
So now they're like, oh no, we're going to get cold.
Mm-hmm.
So Dave starts pounding on the glass of the vestibule, and Corey and Emily grab him and stop him immediately. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, what are you doing?
Dave says maybe there's an alarm if the windows break and help will come. But Emily is like, yeah, if you break the window, he's going to get in here. So stop that.
Mm-hmm.
But then Emily notices a fire sprinkler on the ceiling.
Oh.
She's like, okay, wait, that'll set an alarm and that'll get us help. Do you guys have a lighter? Well, no, they do not.
Right. I think you can just tamper with it, though.
Oh, I didn't even think of that, actually.
Like they always say, like, in hotel rooms, don't hang anything on the sprinklers because it'll set them off. Because I guess that's a common issue. People like to hang their clothes on the sprinklers in hotels, which don't do that because it will set it off.
Good to know. I thought I was about to have to start carrying a lighter everywhere.
No. You just got to hopefully hit it with something.
All right. We also get a fake out moment here where like a cop car pulls up to the edge of the parking lot near the road and then stops. And then they all start banging on the glass, trying to get his attention. But then the cop turns around and drives back from where they came from. So that's just nice.
Sure, of course.
Meanwhile, Coatman's still at the back of the vestibule where there's a door that he's now trying to break into with the crowbar.
Mm-hmm.
And back inside with our three, Dave's like, well, fuck it. How much money do you have in the bank, Corey? Like, I can spare the guy $500. Do you have maybe $1,000 will be enough for him to leave us alone?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't risk that.
I wouldn't either. I'm trying to
think. I'd wait till he got in at the very least. Like, I'm not going to go outside and be like, you want some money?
Yeah, after we saw him kill a man, no. Yeah. Before that, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Corey reminds Dave that his card isn't working, so he can't pitch in. He can't take money out.
Right.
And Emily gives Dave the nice earrings that she's wearing, and then Corey hands over his watch, and they hope that 500 plus some jewelry will be enough.
Sure.
But then Emily realizes something. She goes, Corey, if your card isn't working, how did you get into the ATM?
Oh.
Like scanning it at the door.
Oh, wait. Oh.
And Corey's like, what? Like, I don't know. Who gives a shit? He's like not thinking about this.
I give a shit.
Very much. But Dave and Emily are scared. And Dave's like, please tell me you're just being cheap and the magnetic strip on your card is actually working.
Yeah.
And Corey realizes the problem here. And he admits, I'm not being cheap. Like, it really is not working.
Uh-oh.
Which means the security buzzer is not working properly. And anyone can walk into this vestibule without a card.
Uh-oh.
But okay. Coatman doesn't know that.
He doesn't know, and he doesn't need to know. It's fine.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to keep that in mind. And in the meantime, they're going to continue with this bribery plan. So Dave steps outside with the envelope of cash and jewelry.
Okay. I'm pissed right now, but that's fine. That's fine.
And he's going to wait for Coatman, give him the offer, and if Coatman goes for the envelope, he's going to book it for the car.
Okay.
Okay. So Coatman does come around. They come face to face. Not face to face. They're probably like 15 feet apart.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave explains to him, like, we got this for you here. We haven't seen your face. Like, just take this and we can all go. Coatman's just standing there in silence, staring at him through the whole pitch. And then Dave throws the envelope his way and it lands like about 2 feet from him. Coatman walks up to it, bends down to grab it. So with his car keys in hand, Dave books it to the car. And Coatman immediately starts to walk after him. He's one of those walker types.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because the cars, we can't use the car.
Right.
Because he ripped out the wires or whatever the heck happened there. I don't know.
Yeah. So Emily and Corey are banging on the window, screaming at Dave that the guy's coming for him. And Dave goes for the driver's side door, which I wouldn't. I think he was trying. I don't think he realized that clearly this guy messed with their car, which I don't know how you wouldn't assume that when you see him open the driver's side door before and bend down into it.
Yeah, like what do you think he was doing? Just taking a peek, seeing what's going on in there? Like, I don't.
Right. So he tries, but there's like a lock on it from the outside. So he can't get into his own car. I don't know how. I'm confused. I don't know why, but there's something on his car door that makes him not able to get in through the driver's side.
Oh, there's literally something on there.
Yeah, like an object.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. Okay.
Yeah. Whatever you say.
Yeah. So he has to go around to the passenger door, which is annoying because we have we're wasting seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And he flings it open, launches himself into the car, and he puts the keys in the ignition and tries to start the car. And I'm like, bro, just focus on the phone.
Just need the phone.
So then when the car won't start, he sees that the wires are cut or whatever. And he grabs Emily's phone out of her purse. But just as he does, that's when Coatman shatters the passenger window with his crowbar and pulls Dave out of the car.
Uh-oh.
Emily's phone goes sliding across the pavement, like out of his hand.
Mm.
And now Dave is forced to just fight back and forget about the phone. So he gets beat up a bit, manages to launch himself back into the car, crawls across it, escaping out of the driver's side door. Don't ask me how, when there was a weird lock on the outside before.
Yep, okay.
But yes, he runs back to the vestibule and makes it inside before Coatman can catch up. But now we're just back to square one again. The core three are feeling more and more hopeless. And
did they at least pretend that they opened the door for him so that he didn't know that the door?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they did. They were waiting because it was he was running so hard. They were waiting with the door open.
Got you.
Coatman goes back to standing in his usual spot outside the ATM, just watching again. And Emily takes her lipstick and writes the word help on the ATM window, in big letters. Yeah.
Okay. You do that.
And after another mini time lapse, Emily has another idea. This is very much one of those movies where it's let's try this. It doesn't work. Let's try this. It doesn't work. So she asks for Dave's card and passcode. And she's heard that if you enter your passcode backwards, it alerts the police for cases of robbery.
Okay. Is that I? Oh, okay. I'll be honest. Something I was thinking is try to set off an alarm on the ATM itself.
Yeah.
Just start whacking the shit out of it. Yes. Surely that sets something off.
Yeah. She tries this, but Corey's this is bullshit. It's an urban legend. What if your PIN is 4224? You're screwed. You know? So Emily shrugs and just says it's still worth a try. But yeah, it's not likely to work, but we're desperate at this point. Corey then suddenly notices that Coatman isn't outside. Uh-oh. He's nowhere in sight. So he's like, now's our chance. I'm making a run for it.
Okay. Where?
Yeah. And Coatman, he did grab the phone. He grabs a couple things and put them in the trunk of Dave's car.
Oh.
Weird. Yeah. Dave and Emily both think it's too risky. Corey's like, I'm done sitting in here. If he wanted to come in, he could. Emily says the guy clearly doesn't know that the door is faulty, but Corey's like, he doesn't have to. He could smash a window with the crowbar. He could drive the damn car into the vestibule. He can get into it. He can get here. So Emily asks why he hasn't done those things yet then. Corey doesn't know. And as the horror movie watcher, it's clear to us that he's just a psychopath who's playing a game here and having some fun.
Playing games. Yeah.
Yeah. So now, just another cherry on top of the cake, the ATM machine eats up Dave's card that he put in, trying the stupid backwards code thing too many times.
Oh.
Yeah, too many wrong passcode attempts, and it takes the card and tells him to contact customer service for retrieval. So,
okay. Yeah. I mean, sure. I guess that doesn't even really matter, though. At this point. But again, whacking the shit out of this machine and trying to set off. There's got to be alarms in there.
I would think so, too. They start turning on each other a bit here as well now. Well, the guys do.
Mm-hmm.
And Corey's like, hey, Dave, you lost someone's 401k today at work. That person's pretty pissed at you. What if this is that guy and this is some revenge plot? Which, like, don't ask me how Dave apparently just lost all of some guy's 401k money.
Yeah. Like, I don't know about that.
But Dave's like, okay, that's not what's happening. What if it's one of the 100 people you piss off every day? And then eventually they let it go, because if this is a targeted attack, why was the random man with the dog killed? Like, obviously not.
Sure.
They're just turning on each other here because they're desperate to assign some sort of meaning to this whole situation.
Right.
But maybe things are looking up, because that police car that drove by before is back.
Oh.
Uh-huh. And this time the officer sees them, like, waving wildly at him from inside the vestibule. So he pulls into the parking lot. As he gets closer, though, they realize it's not a cop car. It's just like a security guard.
Oh, okay.
Which is helpful still, but he probably doesn't have a gun.
Oh, true.
But better than nothing. So he has a car. And for some reason, this security guard decides to park the car at a random spot in this parking lot, again, like 40 to 50 feet away from the ATM.
Oh, God.
And then he gets out of his car and is just staring at the Core 3 freaking out inside the vestibule. And he's just like, hey, what are you doing? What, something wrong? What's wrong?
You're just hanging out in there?
Mind you, help is written in lipstick on the window still.
Yeah, right. Dude.
Yeah. A little too late, the guard notices the dead body by the dumpster as our group is screaming and pointing toward it. And so he grabs his walkie-talkie thing to, like, report what's going on here, ask for backup, whatever he's going to do. But he barely gets a word in before Coatman is bashing his head in with the crowbar.
I mean, we all saw it coming.
Exactly.
We all knew. I want to criticize him. But it's, like, hard, I think, because I want to be like, oh, just call it while you're driving away. But, like, that's not what security does.
Mm.
Even though that's what I would probably do. He didn't really do anything wrong.
Okay.
I mean, I think being like, hey, what's happening over there? Like, maybe that. But yeah.
Okay. So RIP to him. Now Emily is starting to go a little crazy, like literally. She's starting to mumble to herself about plants.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys are getting worried about her because I guess they're saying she's disoriented from the cold.
Sure.
I don't know.
Sure. Yeah.
We accept it.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have much time to think about what to do about that because Coatman enters the ATM.
Oh, he's here. He's here. Bessie.
The guys obviously freak out and jump him while Emily cowers in the corner. And we get a proper tussle, 2v1, punches are thrown, we're kicking. And Dave grabs one of those metal pen chains, wraps it around Coatman's neck, and yes, he chokes him out to death.
No, not in act two.
But I feel like, you know, it's act two. And maybe you see what's coming here. So after a couple moments of heavy breathing and what we think is victory, Emily looks outside and sees Coatman still standing there in his usual position.
Huh?
And they realize they've just killed a random man who also has a big parka on, basically.
Oh my God. Wearing the same freaking coat?
Yeah.
Are we for real right now? Okay.
Yeah. So after looking in his wallet, they find pictures of him with his wife and kids.
Oh, good.
And they're freaking out. Unfortunately, this random man doesn't have a phone on him either.
Nah.
So now we're back to square one again, but this time we're murderers.
What? Okay. Okay. Yeah.
So obviously the boys start fighting again. Dave turns on Corey and starts telling him that this is all his fault because he's the reason they stopped at this ATM in the first place. Despite Dave and Emily not wanting to, and Corey tries to turn the night on Dave, saying that it's his fault and he doesn't have much of a reason.
Just because.
They're just fighting to fight, but in the end, Corey is like, no, okay, I'm done sitting here. I'm making a run for it. And he frames it as like, I want to live. If we stay in here, we're going to die.
Oh.
Do you agree? I don't know if that's how I would be thinking.
No, I think all of us, we all want to live. We all want to live. So it's like, I don't know. If that was the honest to God truth, I think we all would have figured that out a while ago.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Well, he's going to do it. And Emily tries to beg him not to. She thinks it's a bad idea, but Corey makes a run for it. And before we get to that, this is our second survivability check-in.
Dude, Okay.
First question, how likely are you to succeed in outrunning Coatman and making it to the car? I'm thinking about us booking it for Emily's phone.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I would have done that in the first place.
Yeah.
But if I did, sprinting back, oof. Is this guy speedy?
Nah, he's not like crazy slow, but he's not speedy.
Okay. Honestly, I'll give myself a 72.
I went 82.
Okay, yeah.
Especially because he went for the stupid driver's side first and lost like a good 10 seconds.
Yeah, that too.
How likely are you to hotwire your car and escape before Coatman catches up to you?
Zero.
Okay, I did one. I did 1%. I was like, maybe by some miracle.
I don't even know how to do that. Like, I wouldn't know where to begin. Okay, so yeah. Could it be me?
Yeah. How likely are you to successfully grab Emily's phone and make it back inside the ATM vestibule?
Oof. I don't want to be too cocky, so I gotta be mindful. Like, I want to be like, yeah, I would have done it, but I would have had to.
I will say he takes like a second, like he clicks a couple buttons on the phone.
On the phone.
Like he's trying to call right away in the car, and I think that's stupid. I'm like, do you have the phone? Just get back to somewhere where you can use it.
Ooh, you know, you're calling that stupid, but I might do that.
Really?
I might try and just, because like now the phone's in my hand, if I can get that call through.
Yeah, you're just like, okay, do now, you know.
Get it through.
Yeah.
So with that then, I'll say 31.
Okay.
Because I do think I'm more likely to do that.
Sure. I did go 68.
Okay.
Because I think with the speed, I can get into the car, keep eyes on him, make sure I'm on the right side of the car to like jump out of before he can get to me, grab that phone, time it. Like I really, oh my gosh, I might recreate this with my sister.
Oh,
have you ever done stuff like that? Have you seen that trend? There is a trend where, well, you know how I used to play like avoid the serial killer in the car game when I was a kid?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's an actual trend like a couple of years ago where they were kind of making fun of like the Michael Myers walk killer. And like your friend would start back and just walk and you would lock up your house and get the keys and you would like have to run and unlock the door and get inside before they can get you.
I think I did see this. Yes. Yeah,
I kind of want to do that, but I want to do it with this situation in mind and see if I can grab the phone from inside and run back. I'm going to recreate this.
I think we, next time we're together, we just need to like recreate all of these situations that we claim we would get out of and just see how true it is.
And then be like, okay, it's fine, 0%.
Just kidding.
Yeah, I did do 68. I think it's very possible with his speed to just get that phone, avoid him and get back in there.
Mm-hmm. Fair.
Would you have a lighter that could set off the sprinkler alarms?
One. I don't smoke, like, so I know. No, probably not.
I did 5% because who knows, maybe I do enjoy a candle from time to time. Maybe I'm on the go.
Just in case there's a candle laying around. Just want to light that thing.
Exactly. Would you be able to communicate with the security guard in time to get help? This was something that annoyed me. They were just like screaming nonsense at him. They were not like,
oh, they're not, yeah,
being efficient in getting him to understand. He's like, they're just like, help us. And I'm like, explain, please explain, you guys.
Yeah. I this actually is a common gripe that I have in horror.
Yeah.
Where they're just like, they're screaming nonsense. In some ways, I give them the benefit of the doubt. Like, I can picture, like, I'm terrible with words. Like, that's just something that's true about me. So I can imagine myself just getting
under
so
stress.
Flustered.
Yeah.
Like, in that moment. So I would like to believe that I do better than them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to say 62.
Okay, yep.
But we'll see, yeah.
I went 65.
Okay, yeah, same boat.
You know what I would do as well? At this point, she put help on the window. I think in advance, just in case anyone comes by, I would like write on the window, stay in your car, call for help.
Yeah, call 911.
Like not just help.
Call 911 is definitely better.
Yeah. And if I didn't do that as a premeditation, I feel like I'm very likely.
That's the first thing that's coming out of my mouth.
Yeah. Call 911. Yeah. I think once they start moving in, I would be like, you guys scream at him to call 911. And I would write it on the window as well so that if he's confused, whatever. How likely are you to never take on the job of a security guard?
Oh, shit. Dude, do I look like a security guard? What am I going to do? Yeah, I got him, guys.
I'd love to see it.
I know. I've actually thought of that before, like at like stadiums and stuff.
Yeah.
Like the hiring security. But then I'll like see like people like my size. And I'm like, oh, they're doing
it. Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so I could definitely be security, clearly. No, I'm not being a security guard for everness. Mm-hmm. So does that mean I'm a 99?
Me too, yep.
Yeah.
Because you gotta, it's like, what if?
What if I'm like desperate for a job? And yeah. I have been desperate for jobs before. That's how I ended up working at Bath and Body Works, everybody. And it was miserable and I hated my life. But
oh my God. I can imagine that being a time.
It was a time.
How likely are you to stay in your car as the security guard?
I don't know what my protocols are. Mm-hmm. So I think I don't know. Like, that's probably training right there. You know what I mean? But if I see, like, help on the window, I don't know what my job is here. I would think as a security guard, your job would be to assess threat first as opposed to doing anything else. So if I'm assessing the threat, yeah, I'm probably calling it in first. Mm-hmm. So how likely am I to stay in the car? 68.
Okay. I went 98.
Really?
Yeah. I ain't getting out. If I'm just so scared. I'm a scared person. And I feel safe in a car. Mm-hmm. So if I see this, if I see help on the window, I'm staying in the car and I'm like assessing everything in the car. I need to drive around a bit. And I'd probably end up seeing the dead body up like fairly soon within the car. And yeah, I just feel like if they're scared and need help, I would feel too vulnerable to get out before I know what is going on.
Sure. I would like to say that if I'm not a security guard and I drive up on this, I'm a 98.
Oh.
I'm thinking security guard. Yeah. What is my job?
Okay.
I guess.
Yeah. How likely are you to immediately call for backup as the security guard?
I think that's probably one of your first things that you're going to want to do in this wild ass looking situation. Probably like 95. Maybe I'm not supposed to, but like.
Interesting.
I would think that's what you're supposed to do.
I went 74. Because I think I would be like scared to call for backup until I knew exactly what was going on. I'd be like, I don't know. What if this is a prank? Like, this is an idiot group of friends trying to prank me or something. That would be random and weird. But yeah, I think I'd be like, in general, I'm very late to ask for help. And I know that's like literally the job. Like, you have to.
Right.
It's part of the job. But I could see myself being a security guard where I'm like, only if I really have to. And I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's very fair.
And then finally, how likely are you to notice and fight off Coat Man as the security guard comes up behind him once he's out?
Sounds like it's very surprise attacks.
Even
sort of
more
vibes
so than the dumpster situation.
Than the first one. Then I'm going to go with like a 7.
Yeah, I went 3.
Oh, damn. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a crowbar to the head and then that's it.
And R.I.P.
Yeah. Okay, so that brings my survivability score for Act 2 to a 55%.
I'm like upset.
Oh no.
Because it's a 48. Like, I should not be under 50%.
Below 50 hurts, yeah.
It hurts in this situation.
Uh-huh.
But I'll accept it. I'll accept it for what it is.
Yeah. I just, spoiler alert for the rest of the episode, I do have a bonus question at the end that I think is just very important that may lift our scores a little bit.
Mm.
Depending on how you answer. I mean, it depends on your answer. It could extremely lower it if you...
Oh, God.
But we'll see. We'll see how it turns out by the end.
Oh, boy.
So Corey's making a run for it.
Right. Yes.
And he does it, and he makes it pretty far. He's about to pass up the car, but then he ends up running into a tripwire.
Huh? Where did the tripwire come from? No.
Yeah. Yeah. And usually a tripwire is set up to catch an ankle, but this line of wire is higher. It hits him like in the chest, and he falls flat on his back, knocking the wind out of himself.
Oh.
So I think we're made to believe that, like, obviously that had to have been set up after we pulled in.
Sure. Yeah.
And there's been so many time lapses of them, like, just, like, focused on each other that,
right.
I don't know, there's, like, those pole lights around the parking lot. So that's what it's connected to.
Okay.
Probably surrounding the entire parking lot at this point.
Right.
So Dave instinctively wants to run out and help Corey, but Emily holds him back, begging him not to leave her alone in the ATM.
Mm-hmm.
So he stays, but they see Coatman starting to approach Corey, and they scream at him to get up and keep running, but Corey's super disoriented. He's like having a hard time breathing from landing on his back.
Sure.
Coatman makes it over to him, kneels down, stabs him in the chest.
Oh.
R.I.P. to Corey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That was simple. And
Josh Peck.
Bye, I guess.
We get another little time lapse. And back in the ATM, Dave and Emily are sitting on the floor having a heart-to-heart. It's that time of the movie.
Oh, yes, of course.
He wishes he wouldn't have offered to drive her home and feels awful.
Not true.
Yeah. And then they hear some banging happening again at the back of the ATM. So they're like, ah, scary. But like, it pisses me off because I feel like if you're hearing him at the back of the ATM trying to do something, why would you not immediately run out of the front and get the head start? Like the main road,
right.
You're going to hit it eventually. Like I get if right. it's silence and you don't know where he is, but he's sure. clearly trying to do something. You can be sneaky. You can just be like,
yes,
you know? You can be like, do-do-do for the listeners.
Just do-do-do-do.
So anyways, they look outside and guess what they see?
Oh.
They see a Corey crawling on the pavement.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. He's still alive.
Of course he is.
So they go and run for him. They're like, we need to help him get him back in here, I guess? I guess.
I mean, yeah, sure.
So they are dragging him back. Coatman comes around the corner, sees this is happening. He runs at them, but they're just in time. Like they get back mm-hmm. into the ATM, of course, in the nick of time. I don't know. I guess in that situation, if you see your friend, I'd probably like try to whisper to them, like, play dead. Like, what are you? We're going to try to figure this out. You just got to play dead. Like,
honestly, not a bad idea.
Yeah. I'm sure he thinks he's dead. So
also, I just got to laugh at the fact that Coatman has not tried the door.
I know.
Like, I know it's supposed to be locked, but like if he's chasing them up to the door, I could like a natural thing would be to like throw himself into the glass at some point,
mm-hmm.
you know, like even just to scare them.
I wonder if he's like twisted in the way where he like chases them just for the fun of it.
Well, that's true. That's
and he doesn't
true.
Really want to get them.
Yeah.
It's got to be. But maybe I'm just like giving extra credit, more credit than I should to the movie.
Fair. Yeah.
All right. Back in the ATM, Emily takes off her coat to press against Corey's wound. Like, I can't remember if they took the weapon out, they might have. And now he's like bleeding out. And so they press the coat.
Yeah.
Dave grabs a metal garbage can and starts beating up one of the ATM machines.
Hey!
Trying to break it to set off some sort of alarm for the police.
Thank you. That only took us the entire movie, but that's okay.
Exactly.
Mm.
But it's not doing enough damage. And that's when water starts pouring through one of the vents into the vestibule.
Huh?
So Coatman has, for some reason, found a literal fire hose and has broken through a vent in the back to use it on them. And they try to open the ATM door at this point to get out of here. But Coatman has pulled their car all the way up to the door. And now they're blocked in. Like, they can open the door, like, 2 inches before it hits the front of their car.
Okay.
We saw him, like, put it in neutral and just slide it up.
Interesting.
But keep in mind that you can open the door a couple inches.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that already.
This water's pouring in, and of course, it's filling up the vestibule.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie actually reminds me so much of P2. It's Christmas. It's it starts in a corporate building. We're in isolated environment.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, the water in the elevator is filled up.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder which one came out first. I can't remember. It's around the same time.
You know what it's reminding me of? Is what? Splinter.
Yeah. Even though also Splinter, same time.
Yeah, around the same time, isolated environment. And then like when the security guard drove up and waited too long. Same vibe.
Yes. Why were we all writing the same scripts in like 2012?
Apparently we were.
So yeah, the ATM starts to fill up with water. And I'm sitting here like, just keep the door open. Because then just crack it open. You can do that.
Yeah.
But they're freaking out. And Emily thinks that this guy's trying to drown them. But Dave's like, no, he's trying to freeze us. Like, give them hypothermia or something.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay.
Sure.
Yeah. It's very cold. It's been very cold.
Sure. That was my first thought, was the cold more than anything.
Yeah. So Dave checks the pockets of Corey's coat because Corey's wearing the coat that the guy that they killed had on. Now he's checking the pockets again, question mark.
Okay.
And this time he finds cigarettes and a lighter, which they just didn't check before.
Okay. Yep.
So he now takes the lighter and he tries to reach up to the fire sprinklers again to try and set off the alarm, but he can't reach. What do you think the move is here? You have a lighter. You want to set off the alarm.
Light the cigarettes or like light something on fire.
And try to reach. That doesn't work.
We
have her and we have him. We have Dave and we have Emily.
Oh, we do a little piggyback situation.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah.
Well, they don't think about that. He gets up on a counter before they think about that on the side of the vestibule and tries to reach that way, and he still can't reach. So they decide to gather up a bunch of paper and set it on fire in the garbage can, the metal garbage can.
Like that would be my thought. Like,
yeah, it creates more smoke.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that works. They're able to get a fire going in the garbage can, but then Dave is still freaking out and frustrated because he still can't reach it up high enough.
It should just have, like, I put some plastic in my oven last week by accident.
Okay.
And my fire alarm was losing its shit. Like, I know it would be detecting that smoke.
My fire alarm went off yesterday because my stepdad he was like welding in my basement. He was like setting metal on fire. And it was very smoky and smelly. And yes, of course, that set it off. But anyway, it wasn't just for fun. He was replacing my water heater. And for some reason, that needed to happen. So
it was just his hobby, guys. Don't worry about it.
He comes over, heads in the basement, sets metal on fire. I'm like,
it's a great time.
That's Sunday. So what pisses me off too about this section, I think, is it's literally a 5-minute portion of the movie where they're like, oh, what do we do? What do we do?
Oh.
And it's like anyone would – I get the panic and I get like – you might not think of it first to get her on his shoulders or something, but watching them fumble and like spend so much time not coming to that conclusion, I was like, guys, it's so easy. It's so easy. Just get up there.
Yep.
So eventually she's like, wait, what if I get on your shoulders?
Wait a minute. I have a brilliant idea.
And he looks at her like she's an absolute genius. Mind you, Corey's just floating around in the water at this point. It's like 2 feet. It's like 2 feet high. It's just floating around.
This is insane.
So yes, she gets on Dave's shoulders. It works. The sprinklers go off. The alarm sounds. And Dave and Emily are celebrating, but Dave slips and Emily falls backwards on his shoulders and slams her head hard on the metal counter.
Ow. No. Yeah.
So she's either dead or knocked out, and Dave's freaking out.
Yeah.
Like cradling her in his arms. And then, bam, the car suddenly rams through the front wall of the vestibule.
Here it comes, I guess.
And we get a shot from outside showing that Coatman has rammed the security car into the back of Dave's car, and that's how the crash happened.
Okay.
Nobody got run over, though. Dave looks out through the broken wall and sees that Coatman has now pulled out a lawn chair, and he's just taken a seat. to enjoy the show from his usual spot. Like, he's getting tired of standing.
I just, like, hate him. Like, hot take. This guy pisses me off because he's the shit. But, yeah. Like, the reality is, like, he's just dealing with, like, a group of really stupid people.
Yes, exactly. So Dave grabs a glass bottle of alcohol from inside his car, and he ends up making a makeshift Molotov, basically.
Okay. I mean, I guess.
Then he walks out and throws the Molotov at Coatman, who doesn't move whatsoever from his spot on his lawn chair. He just sets on fire. Oh. And then Dave realizes that it's just the security guard's dead body propped up in the chair with the coat on.
Oh my God. Okay. Yep.
And then we pan over to Coatman standing by the dead body by the dumpsters. And it's like, oh, of course. And finally, the police arrive.
Oh!
From the alarm.
Enough commotion for you?
Three cruisers come speeding into the parking lot. And while Dave was standing by the fire body,
yes.
Something like sprayed out at him. I think it might have burst, like a burst of alcohol maybe sprayed out with the fire or something. I don't know. And it like impairs his vision. So Dave's writhing on the ground, very discombobulated, as the cop cars surround him and get out pointing their guns his way.
Right.
He's screaming at them that he didn't do anything wrong. It's him. He's pointing, he's screaming that he, quote, killed them. Like, he killed them, whatever. But they're not listening to him. They end up cuffing him, putting him in the back of a police car.
Honestly, thank you. I'm safe now.
Yeah,
put me
right?
in there. I'll take it.
We get another time lapse, like maybe 30 minutes. And Dave is still in the back of one of the cars. The sun's starting to come up and the crime scene's been taped off and is being actively investigated. And as Dave gets driven off out of the parking lot, they pass a line of crime scene tape behind which a crowd has gathered with morbid curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And in that crowd, he sees Coatman.
Yep.
Now we get this whole sequence of the investigators reviewing the security cam footage inside the ATM that night.
Oh.
Of course, Coatman is nowhere to be seen, and it's basically being framed as Dave being the aggressor. And it's a reach, but like, it's a bunch of little things that make him look bad, like him like attacking the ATM machine and killing the man with the phone thing. And at one point he pushed Emily off of him and she like fell to the ground. And it's just like a whole bunch of stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
But then outside of that, this just does make me angry though, because it's so stupid that the vibe is we're meant to take away that Coatman is like a mastermind that set Dave up to look like the guilty party from the very beginning. And he succeeded. And I'm just like, no. Now, cut to Coatman arriving at a creepy storage unit that he apparently operates out of. And he has this whole crazy corkboard set up where we see that this wasn't his first ATM master plan. And it won't be his last.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's it. Oh, that's ATM. Okay.
Yep. That's going to make me upset.
Yes. It's just stupid.
I think the ending is so unsatisfying.
Yeah. I don't even know if like, do the other two live?
Well, that's what I'm thinking. They mustn't.
Are they dead? Are they alive?
They would just be like, oh, no.
Witnesses.
No, it was Coatman. Yeah.
Right.
So they must be dead, I guess. Oh my God. That's so annoying.
I know.
No, and that's like literally what I said too. This guy thinks he is like everything. And it's like, no, bro, like you got lucky that they didn't think to open the door.
Yeah.
Yeah. The 2 inches to let the water out. Like, are we choking?
I have 4 questions for Act 3. And then, like I said, we'll have a bonus question that'll factor into the final score.
Alrighty.
But first, how likely are you to avoid the tripwire when running away?
Is it like fishing line?
It's hard to see. Yeah,
hard
it came out of nowhere.
I'm not sure like that I would be like sprinting and like not like and see it or something. But like there's no way I ever let that man out of my sight while I was sitting in there. Like there's no way I didn't see him put that up.
Right.
There's no chance in hell I did.
With
not
the
see
amount
that
of time that that would take him to do.
Exactly.
I'm going to miss things here and there, but not something that takes that long.
Exactly. So I'm willing to give myself an 85 on that simply because I know I saw him put it up.
Whoa, I gave myself a 23.
really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fair. Okay, this is, listen, this is turning into Better Watch Out where I'm just.
I know, yeah.
I'm just mad.
That's okay.
And so I'm like, no. He doesn't get to win.
Yeah, I gave myself a 23 because I didn't even think about that. Like, I saw him put it up. It's possible. Mm. You're right, though. I might be in that boat. But yeah, I don't know. I'd probably be, if I'm going to book it, I'm going to book it. And I probably wouldn't see it. And I just, yeah. I did accept that here.
Fair.
How likely are you to avoid getting stabbed by Coatman while the wind has been knocked out of you? Because you do have time to get back up and keep running. But I mean, are you able to do that?
I've had the wind knocked out of me before. Like, we've all had that happen. I played soccer growing up. And you just had to keep playing the game because you had a job to do on the field. And I think if it was my life that I was fighting for, I want to think I would be a little bit more likely to at least get up and try.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying I'd be likely, but I don't think it would be impossible. I'm going to give myself a 47.
Okay, I went 19.
Okay.
Because I think I could, I would try. He doesn't even try.
Right.
And I think I would try, but I'm just like at that point. Yeah, I've also had the wind knocked out of me. And I feel like if I even can get up and run, I'm not going to be able to outrun him after that. Mm. So, yeah. How likely are you to successfully set off the fire sprinklers without getting hurt? So I kind of like put that all in one where it's like you're able to do that. I think you got there. You were like, that's something that we can do. Get on my shoulders or I'll get on yours. They're like celebrating while she's on his shoulders. And I'm like, just get me down. Get her down.
Yeah, it's kind of stupid that they're still doing
that.
Annoying. I'll say 92.
I went 93.
Yeah, just
it just makes me mad.
Like, nah, that's not happening.
Yeah. And I feel like also a big reason why he slipped was because there's like 2 feet of water.
Which also wouldn't be there.
Which wouldn't be there because I would have someone, one of us keeping that door open consistently so it didn't get to that point. And I would come up with the idea of me getting on your shoulders way before there's that much water.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then final third act question, how likely are you to make and throw a Molotov at the correct Coatman?
Ooh, low. No, just because I don't think I could correctly make it. I think I could probably figure out that that was a dead body, quite honestly. But
right. I know. It's like, why do you think he's just sitting there like that and letting you get so close?
Mm-hmm. I think that my issue is like in trying to make it, I'd blow myself up because like I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But I'll give myself a 21.
Oh my gosh. I gave myself a 61.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe because I'm so angry.
Fair enough.
Angry and biased. But I gave myself a 61. I was just really upset. He made the Molotov look real easy. So I was like, I'm going to go buy this movie magic where
you put like a little cloth in it and then you light it on fire and then you throw it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it looked pretty easy. And we have the lighter, we have the alcohol and whatever. And I absolutely would not think, I would not be tricked by this stupid dead body in the chair.
Yeah, no. That I, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Okay. I came to a 49%. Oh! I did it too. I got below 50.
Right under the 50.
Yeah.
For me, I ended up with a 61.
Okay. That feels
for
good.
Act three. Yeah.
Feels nice. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to calculate like we usually do. Are 1, 2, and 3 acts for a final score, but that's not going to be our final score. There is a bonus question, and I will let you know what that's going to do to our quote final score that we get right now so far.
Okay.
So my current before the bonus question final score comes out to a 54%, and I'm just not okay with that.
Okay. Yeah, mine is a 58.
Yeah.
So yeah, same boat.
Okay, perfect. So I have a bonus question. This is going to be weighted 3 times. And what you're going to do is you're going to take that 58% that you have now, add it to whatever number you're going to assign this bonus question. But the bonus question's weighted 3 times.
Okay.
And you're going to divide those by 200, those 2 numbers, the weighted.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Okay. So the bonus question is, How likely are you to successfully escape this situation at any time during the entire film?
Thank you.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's funny. I was thinking literally throughout this episode, this is like one episode where I'm like, damn, this worksheet is fucking me over.
I know.
Because at the beginning, I do think I'm running away at the very beginning.
I do think too, like it's not really part of the question, but I wouldn't be at this ATM. Well, like that's what's frustrating too.
Yeah.
But yeah, even if we do force ourselves to get inside that ATM, oh my God, it just comes back to like that first moment when he slowly walks over to that dumpster man.
That's the moment.
It's like, all right, run and drive. That's it. No movie.
Yep.
And then there is like multiple moments, like when he's banging on the back of the wall. It's like, he's busy back there. We can sneak away.
Right. Like, let's go.
Yeah.
I like that this question is in here. It's funny that you gave us a bonus question to bring our score up, where I gave us a bonus question to bring our score down last
week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was all about that math. But
yeah,
I hope people don't hate me for saying that I'm giving myself a 92.
I gave myself a 90.
Okay. Yeah.
We're mad.
We're like, no, that can't be happening.
We're passionate.
We sure are.
Okay. Where are you at?
I now have a final score of 82.
I have 81.
Oh my God.
Yep.
I feel so much better about that.
Yeah, I don't mind putting an 82% combined on the title for this one.
Yeah, right? People would
honestly
be like,
it could be 90. It could be 90. But do you know what I mean? Like, we can't be too mad. But yeah, I'm fine with an 82 combined.
Absolutely. Yeah, that makes sense to me because there was just like, yes, we have to play the game like we always say, but we'd probably be out of here.
Yeah. Well, that was ATM. Apologies for that. And you can check us out on Instagram at I'd Survive Podcast. Over there, we have a bunch of links to all the places you can find us, including our Discord, where you can submit your own scores through this fancy little link where you can play along with us, answer the same questions, and let us know, would you survive?
Woo!